If you copy made, it'll go to Chicago Magazine. It'll be transcribed tomorrow. I'll make another quick copy that goes right over to Tony Veloukis.
All set. Good. You may have some others.
We can get mass copies for anyone else that you want.
He probably has his own device.
Yes, I'm sure. Yes, he's all set. He can dial in any restaurant in town. Okay, you ready to go? Okay, this is an interview with House Speaker Michael Madigan, recorded on Monday the 27th of January. I'd like to ask a couple of basic questions about your early beginnings in politics. How did you first get interested in politics?
My father was involved in Chicago Democratic politics. He is a Democratic precinct captain in the 13th Ward Democratic Organization. Politics was very important in his life, and I learned a lot of my politics from him. So he was the cause of my first interest in politics.
What did he teach you about politics?
The basics.
The
notion of a need for a good sense of organization, both personally and professionally. He gave me a good understanding of how political people are driven by certain interests, quite often a personal self-interest. He had been friendly with a number of prominent Chicago Democratic political people. And since he was close to them and privy to their thought processes, he was able to transmit that to me.
How close was he to Mayor Daley?
I would characterize them as political friends, not personal friends, but political friends on a personal basis. They had worked together in the county clerk's office when Michael Flynn was the county clerk. So Michael Flynn was the Democratic Ward Committeeman of the 13th Ward Organization. My father was personally friendly with him. Mr. Daley was the county comptroller at the time, which in those days was a very important office, because prior to the 1970 Constitution, the county comptroller was the person who prepared the county budget and, in essence, maintained control over expenditures in the county.
But
appointed by the county clerk, not by the president of the county board.
But his relationship to the mayor was a little more indirect than your relationship with the mayor.
His relationship was probably more personal in nature than mine, since they were peers in the county clerk's office, basically the same age. My relationship with the mayor was more of a chairman of the party to a ward committeeman and the mayor of the city to an aspiring young political person.
Was politics something that was discussed at your dinner table, or was that discussed in father-son conversations?
It was discussed all the time. Politics, as I said, was an important part of my father's life. He was a very strong Democrat. He was a product of the Depression, a product of industrial workplaces before safety laws, before workers' compensation. And so he carried with him very strong feelings in favor of many of the enactments of the New Deal. And, of course, was a very strong Roosevelt political person.
So the discussion was issues as well as tactics.
Yes.
What about your sister? Was she interested in politics?
Not too much, no.
What does she do now?
She's a mother and a housewife. And she has just returned to school. So she spent some time at the University of Illinois Chicago campus, never took a degree. And she just returned to the Daley College, which is the local community college.
What about your mother? Was she interested in politics?
Yes, she was. Not as much as my father. And she still maintains a very, you know, high level of interest in politics. But not as much as my father. Excuse me.
What was the one or two of all the things that your father talked about, politics, what was the one or two things that stick out in your mind as being most significant to your adult life?
In terms of his political background or political knowledge that I may have carried forward?
Right.
Well, one, he was a very loyal Democrat. And he had seen the disarray of the local Democratic Party prior to 1931, when Cermak became the mayor and was the county chairman. So he knew firsthand that absent strong local leadership, the Democratic Party would be like any political party. It would pretty much move in its own direction without good leadership. He knew that. You know, he taught me that. And at the same time, he was a very loyal Democrat, loyal to the principles and the philosophy of the Democratic Party as far as it was associated with the advancement of working people in the country. That was his background, and that's what he taught me, and that's what I carry today.
Would it bother him, the current image of the National Democratic Party, that perhaps it has lost that Roosevelt image?
Yes, to the extent that the Democratic Party today, in my judgment, has moved away from its traditional role of being an advocate for working men and women, of being an advocate for economic opportunity in the country. When the Democratic Party was seen by the majority of Americans as the party of economic opportunity, it was the majority party. It became the minority party when the majority of Americans no longer viewed it as the party of economic opportunity, but rather a party that moves off in 15 or 20 different directions, advocating 15 or 20 causes that have no direct relationship to the aspirations of your ordinary American.
Let's stop tape and eat.
Okay.
We were talking about your father and his relationship. Tell me a little bit about what your life was like at St. Adrian's Grammar School. What kind of a kid were you?
I like to think a very normal American child. My main interest was sports. I played local softball, played some football in grammar school.
Were you popular? Did you have a lot of friends?
I don't think I had more than the ordinary child.
Did you spend more time doing homework than some of your friends?
Yes, I did. Especially after I started high school. But there would be a reason for that. I went to St. Ignatius High School, which was academically inclined, and most of the people in my neighborhood went to schools other than places like St. Ignatius. So my school was telling me that you should do 3 hours of homework every night, and they were telling my parents the same thing, and the other schools in the neighborhood were not telling children that. So they had more time.
Let's stop taping, and I didn't realize that the entree was coming this quickly, so.
We could tell some good stories, though, Steve.
Oh,
good.
Sure. Back to young Michael Madigan. Kind of an average, normal kid. Did you ever get in any trouble?
Not real trouble, no. When I was in grammar school, I was... No, thank you. When I was in grammar school, at different grade levels, why I would have some discipline problems. And so the Catholic schools of those days had a two-part report card, and one part would relate to the academic progress of the child, the other would relate to the disciplinary progress of the child. And I never did real well in the disciplinary section of the report.
Well, what were the things that you
Nothing
used
serious.
To do? Well, what were the things that you used to do that you'd get a little check for?
Oh, talking in class, inattention to the teacher, just normal mischief that a fifth grader might get involved in.
But never inattention to detail.
I'm not sure on that. I do have good attention to detail, yes, and I'm not really sure when that developed. I suspect that some of it came from my father, because he was much the same way. In his job for the city of Chicago, why he would carry numerous notes around with him, which is the same thing that I do now.
Were you and your father real close?
Yes.
How did he die?
Died of a heart attack at age 60.
Do you recall the last conversation you had with him?
Not the last conversation. No. But what I recall is that he had suffered his second attack. He had suffered an attack when he was 58. And then he suffered another one when he was 60, and he was in the hospital. He was recovering, and it appeared as if he would recover, and I was on my way to a funeral for a friend of his. And when I arrived at the chapel, I was told to call my mother, who told me that the hospital had called and asked for us to come back out to the hospital, and so we both went out there. And I just went up to the hospital room, and the hospital personnel were administering a code 99, if you know what that is, you know, which pretty scary because electrodes are affixed to the body. Electricity is interjected and the body rises off the bed. Well, I saw all of that. And so that was my last experience.
If you were to compare yourself to your father insofar as a public political figure and as a human being, if you were to measure each of those, how do you stack up against your father?
I have more ambition and have had for quite a while. I think I have the same level of sensitivity to other people, to their emotions, to the aspirations of my children and my family. Clearly, I strive for that. And clearly, nowadays that I have my own family, much of my activity is really motivated by aspirations that I know he shared.
If your father were alive today, what would he be telling you about the way that you conduct yourself publicly and privately?
I think he would be pretty happy. I know that he was ambitious for my political success. And I would think that he would be very happy with the success that I have enjoyed. I think he would be pretty happy, very happy, with the type of family that I'm raising. So I have three children, a fourth on the way. They're all wonderful children. He was a good family man. He had two interests in life, his family and politics.